You're listening to David Kaplan. Weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
We don't get fooled again.
Welcome back. ESPN 1000 in San Diego at the Grand Hyatt, site of the 2019 baseball winter meetings. With Danny Zetterman and Chris Black, I'm David Kaplan. 312-332-3776. Let's move away from baseball. We'll get back to it when Jeff Passan and Jesse Rogers come up here and do a baseball roundtable with us around 10:25 this morning. Rick Hahn at 11:25. So we've got a lot to do, and Jim Bowden's going to be here with us at 11 o'clock. And then we'll crosstalk with Carmen and Yurko at noon. Dan Orlovsky in mere moments will join us once he gets done with First Take. And we'll talk about Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears and see where things are going into the Green Bay Packer game. 312-332-3776. Bears and Packers. And it's amazing, the line on the Bear game opened at 7 on Sunday.
Actually, Carm texted me about that, Cap. I got to read that to you. He explained what that is. It didn't actually open at 7. Hold on, let me pull up my text from Carmy.
No, it did.
No, he said the Bears-Packers game did not open at Green Bay minus 7. It's called a look-ahead number. That line opened up at 5.5 most places. So that was called a look-ahead number, he explained, and that the line really opened up around 5.5. Okay. Now, he's one half of the odds couple, and the odds couple know more about gambling than anyone else I know. So I'm going to take him at his word on that.
Okay, all I'm telling you is that even though he blocked me on Twitter, since I have a second Twitter account, secret account, I saw Brad Biggs' tweets. He thinks he's blocked me, but I see all of his tweets anyway.
Well, now he's going to block that one.
He doesn't know what the name of it
is. Why don't you extend the olive branch?
I have. I have extended the olive branch. He wants no part of the olive branch. But anyway, he put the line on Sunday per someone that he has in Vegas that the opening line on Sunday night was Packers minus 7. And now you've got the Packers minus 4.5 when I checked it late last night before I went to bed. So, and they said that was because sharp money in Vegas had come in on the Green Bay-Chicago game. It's down to 4 now. So it's moved. Even if Carm's, you know, right on the 5.5, which I'm sure he is, Carm's a guru, it's moved all the way down to 4, and there's talk it could get as low as 3 by game time, which tells you that the Bears are a very, very live dog. So we'll see how all of it shakes out when we play on Sunday, but it's good to see the Bears in a good place. So, you know, you've got the Bears without Roquan Smith. In fact, Matt Nagy talked about Roquan's injury yesterday. It's unfortunate. Here is Matt Nagy yesterday when he met the media, and that Roquan Smith will not be back.
58, Roquan does have a torn pec, so he'll be on IR. So that's unfortunate for him. You know, he's really putting together a good year, but that's you know, he'll bounce back, and that's that. As far as the rest of the guys, we'll update everybody on Wednesday. The next couple of days, we'll just, like I said the other day, you know, just keep these guys day by day, try to get them all back up to speed, and the guys that are hurt, try to get them ready as fast as we can.
So without Roquan Smith, but you do get Akeem Hicks back. Well, the Bears haven't confirmed that. All indications are he's going to play.
And Prince Amukamara, they're not certain of.
Correct. He's still dealing with a hamstring. But getting Akeem Hicks back and losing Roquan, I still think is a net positive, because Kwiatkowski has been plug and play and been outstanding. There's a huge jump up defensively with Akeem Hicks back in that should give some real help to Khalil Mack. You know, it just depends how many plays you can use Akeem Hicks for. Let's not forget, when you got a dislocated elbow, you're not lifting weights, you're not doing a lot, your cardio is not the same, as Yurko always tells us. It's a big difference, kid, getting on the treadmill and running or doing some workouts. It's not football shape. So how many plays can he really play? It's not just jump him back into action and he plays every down. That's just not going to happen. But how much will he affect what Khalil Mack, Leonard Floyd, and those guys, Eddie Goldman, Nick Williams, are able to do? They've got good depth in there. Hopefully the plays he's in, he can occupy blockers and make things easier on a guy like Khalil Mack. That's the key.
I don't think it's a positive to have Akeem Hicks back and Roquan Smith out. Akeem Hicks hasn't played meaningful football since week five. What kind of shape is he going to be in? What kind of difference is he going to make? Statistically speaking, this Bears defense has been pretty dominant without him and with Roquan Smith in the game. Obviously, he missed the game in London because he had personal reasons. But since he's been back, he's been playing really good football, and this Bears defense has been dominant without Akeem Hicks. Now you're going to go the reverse. You're going to have a guy back who's been on the bench since week five and no Roquan Smith. I think this defense might take a little step back, but as a Bears fan, I'm not worried because the Packers are not playing great football. This is a perfect time for the Bears to be facing the Packers. The Packers struggled against a really bad Washington Redskins team on Sunday. The Redskins defense is nowhere near as dominant as the Bears.
So let me ask you a question. When Mitch Trubisky had a big game against the Redskins, what did everybody say?
Oh, it's the Redskins. Who cares?
Then they go play the Packers at Lambeau, and Aaron Rodgers was horrific in that game. So, yeah, I get tired of hearing, whether it's Mitch or anyone else, they did it against a bad team. It doesn't matter. They're NFL players, and these guys get paid, too, on the other side of the ball. They had every chance to win that football game. The Packers could not put away a really lousy Redskins team while the Bears went into Washington and beat them. So, again, Washington is not very good. I get it. But let's just understand that these are all professional football players. They are. And guys are going to play well, and guys are going to have bad days. Aaron Rodgers is still one of the three greatest quarterbacks probably of all time. Certainly top five. He's in the team photo for the top five. He's amazing. But he was not good on Sunday. Maybe, just maybe, the Bears can walk into Lambeau and find a way to win. So we'll see. I'm going to ask Dan Orlovsky that. You know, he played in the National Football League, and albeit he was, you know, a career backup, he also has a pretty good handle on what it's like. And does he give credence to the thought, show me you can do it against an elite team and not a bad team, when you see some of the really good quarterbacks struggle? You know, I watched Tom Brady the other day. He's the greatest of all time. The Chiefs are not the greatest defensive team. Tom Brady was terrible.
I don't think Tom Brady was terrible. I got to watch that entire game on the plane while I flew, and I don't think Tom Brady's terrible. I think Tom Brady has zero weapons. I think if Julian Edelman is not open – and he can't throw the ball to Julian Edelman, he's just lost out there. You know, they got to get creative. Josh McDaniels has to get creative with the offense because there's just no weapons for Tom Brady.
All right, let's go to our guy, Dan Orlovsky, fresh off the TV set, steps it up and goes into the big leagues now. He's on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Daniel, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Man, Cap, I'm doing good, bud. How are you, dude?
Doing well down here in San Diego for the baseball winter meetings, but looking forward to talking football with you. You and I were texting last Thursday night, so I want you to take our listeners back to your review post the Bears-Cowboys game, what you thought of the offense, and more specifically, Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, I mean, outstanding performance. I thought the offense really got back to an identity. I thought the offense allowed the quarterback to flourish. Controlled the football game for a great majority of it, and then seized opportunities. You know, I think that you saw, again, another week where Mitchell was really confident with the football, knew where to go with it, was willing to take some chances with it, and a big win. Like, you're seeing, three or four weeks in a row now where there's remnants, there's signs, there's opportunity or moments where you go, okay, this looks a little bit more familiar than the stuff that we've seen this year. So a lot of very encouraging stuff.
All right, so as you look at Green Bay, they struggle with Washington. They do find a way to win the football game, but they were not very good. Aaron Rodgers was not very good. And I keep hearing, you know, different people say, yeah, I don't know. Mitch did it against the Lions, or Mitch did it against the Redskins. Show me that you could do it against one of the elite teams. And then I watch Aaron Rodgers against the Redskins in Lambeau, and he was not very good. Do you put credence in that's a bad defense, so it doesn't count? Because as far as I know, those guys get paid on the other side of the ball too.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's aware that there's different levels to defenses, right? Like, I don't need to sit here and tell anybody that one person's performance against the best defense is more impressive than someone's against the worst. But I will say this, you still have to go do it. I've seen guys have bad performances against bad defenses. And what's the reason? Oh, this and that. So you still have to go and actually do your performance and do your job. And so I don't know if the Packers defense is significantly better than the Lions defense either. And so there is some credence to it. Absolutely. But they are pros. And there's only 32 teams. And your job is you get 16 opportunities and you got to go play as well as you can for each and every one, no matter who the opponent. And that's part of a growth process as an individual and a team. And so I'm never going to be somebody who knocks a guy for, oh, well, it was against this. I will caveat stuff with, all right, we got to show it next week. Show it against this opponent that's coming. I think that at the end of the day, when you perform well, there's a lot of good to take from it, and there's a lot of growth you can learn from the things that you didn't. But I'm never going to go like, oh, well, it was against this team. It's a win.
So let's preview this matchup, Bears, Packers. Look, the Bears are a long shot to get to the playoffs. I understand that. They will control the Minnesota portion that they can handle. They can sweep that season series. They've got to win out the final three, and it starts Sunday at Lambeau Field. How do you look at this matchup, having watched both these teams on tapes, you know, throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the Packers offense. They're not very good right now. How about this? On third down, when they have third down, they average 8 yards to go for their season. 8 yards. If this isn't a team that has rhythm on offense right now, they are struggling. And this is the crazy thing. They got the best offensive line in football right now. Like, as metrics and statistics, they're the best offensive line in football, but they stink on third down. Their drop-back passing game is not very good. I mean, the play-action pass game for them is still having success. And Aaron Jones is still having his moments, but their drop back pass game is not good. And so for a Bears defense, continue to force this team to play on 3rd and 8. Like, continue to get them into those situations, because their confidence level and then their, you know, kind of data this year says that they really struggle with it. I think that they need to be – this was what the Bears defense did the best against the Cowboys last week. I said that, man, you can't give up the big play action pass, like the big chunk pass, the explosive passes. And they didn't give up any. And they got to continue with that mindset against the Packers, because that's really going to hinder their offense. The Packers defense, I think that the Bears can line up and run the ball right down the throat of the Packers defense, right down the middle of it, because it's the weakness of their defense right now. I think Matt Nagy has kind of gotten into a group. I think he needs to be very tactical with how he goes about this. I would reduce the splits in my receivers, meaning bring my receivers, which is something the Bears do a lot, but bring them close to those offensive tackles. The corners for the Packers are really good, unless they can't get their hands on you. Then they become a much less of an impact. So that's something that offensively they need to do.
We're talking to Dan Orlovsky. He's our guy each and every week in the 10 o'clock hour on Tuesdays as we talk about the previous Bears game and the upcoming game. So who are you picking to win this game? You always have a pretty good handle on what the X's and O's tell you and what a team can do.
Yeah, I sat on the phone last week and I said, man, I want to pick the Bears, but until they do it, I was really impressed. So I know going to Lambeau is difficult. I'm aware of that. But I think that right now there's one team playing better than the other, and I think the Bears are playing better than the Packers. And I think that teams will only go so long with getting away. You know, there's the saying in the NFL, winning cures everything. No, it doesn't. Winning covers everything. And while you're winning, you can cover up some of the things that are going on with your football team. And I think that might be happening in Green Bay. I know Aaron said that he's okay winning ugly. No, he's not. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He doesn't want ugly wins. He has a standard. And so I think the Bears are playing better football. I think the Bears are kind of finding a groove. I think the Bears, their head coach and their quarterback, are very aware that while winning is the most important thing, the very next one in line is making sure that they answer the questions tied to their job security in the future. And so I think the Bears have a good chance to go up to Green Bay and win the game.
Well, that would be it. If that happens and there's some way that the Vikings can lose another game, I know they've got to play the Chargers, who are playing much better football. It sets up a real interesting matchup a week from now, a week from Sunday, when the Bears and the Chiefs lock horns at Soldier Field. What was your thought on Eli Manning last night? Because the old man had to play with Daniel Jones out, and the old man, while he didn't win the football game, boy, he looked like a kid again. He was having so much fun out there.
Yeah, I think just a great story of a person being a professional and a person putting others before them. I mean, Eli could have very much so handled it differently or whatnot, but I do think you saw that childhood joy in the game of football and him having some success. He threw it pretty well. I don't think that Eli was the reason that the Giants lost the football game. And so for a guy that has said, I'm not a backup and I want to start somewhere next year, you know, it was certainly a step in the right direction for that being the potential opportunity for him. But I just the happiness of seeing him there. And then the respect that I thought the Eagles players paid him after the game, you know, kind of getting in line and taking the opportunity to shake his hand, I thought was very classy and impressive. And it was, you know, one of the reasons why football is such a cool game.
Do you think Eli's playing somewhere next year, or you think he's riding off into the sunset with his money and his kids and his wife?
No, I think he's going to play. I mean, I think from what I heard last night, you know, Eli said, like, I'm not a backup, and I want to continue to play. And I think that this league is always looking for people that can be very impactful in their organization, whether it's on the field or for a young player that he goes and competes against or whatnot. So I wouldn't have said this a couple weeks ago, but I think there's a chance that Eli goes and plays somewhere, yes.
And do you think Philip Rivers is playing somewhere else next year, wherever that is, because he's not a backup either?
Oh, wow, that's a fascinating one, right? I mean, Philip has been in San Diego from the jump, and I don't know if Philip's ready to leave San Diego. Obviously, he has his family, which is big in numbers, but I don't think he's got the competitive drive to just walk away right now. I think Philip is going to play somewhere else as well. I think it's going to be a very unique situation where, you know, Philip, Eli, Breeze, we don't know where those guys are going to be. But I can see Phillip, just because the competitiveness in this.
Hey, man, have a great rest of your day, and we'll look forward to talking to you next Tuesday. And hopefully it's previewing a big Bears-Chiefs matchup.
Boom. Thanks, Cap.
Have a good day. There you go, Dan Orlovsky. He and I were texting and then on the phone during the Bears-Cowboys. He was as excited for how Mitchell Trubisky was playing as I was. He's like, dude, I am so fired up for Mitch. He looks so good. I know he's got that ability in him. I was so happy for that kid.
How come he didn't make any Twitter videos of him yelling, gotcha, take that!
Because he doesn't.
He was that excited like you.
Because he's not.
Nobody was as excited as you except for Ryan Pace.
Yeah, that's probably, and maybe Trubisky's girlfriend.
Maybe. I doubt she was even as excited as
you. Yeah, I was fired up. And, you know, you could say that I jumped off the bandwagon 5 weeks ago when he was struggling. Yeah, and I may again if he goes out and is awful this week. So take that. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. Jesse Rogers is going to join us in mere moments. And then a few minutes into it, Jeff Passan is going to come from TV right here. And we'll have a little bit of a baseball roundtable with Jesse and Jeff Passan, me, Danny. So stay right here. We'll talk White Sox. We'll talk Cubs. 11:25. We'll have Rick Hahn tomorrow morning on the show on set with us. White Sox stud Jim Thome will be with us. So excited to talk to him. Danny came downstairs after he set everything up. I was getting coffee, and I'm sitting with Jim Thome and Joe Girardi and the young lady who's the PR director for the New York Yankees. Danny came over, and he's talking nutrition with Joe Girardi. Yeah, it was a great morning, man. Hey, this season, surprise everyone with Holiday Instant Tickets from the Illinois Lottery. You could hide a Merry Money inside fuzzy house slippers for your mom, sneak a Snow Me the Money inside a tin of homemade cookies for your favorite coworker. May I get that for you, Danny? Or just slide a Holiday Countdown ticket under your neighbor's front door, and the surprises keep coming. Because this year, eligible Holiday Instant Tickets come with a second chance to win up to $1 million. Give more surprises with Holiday Instant Tickets from the Illinois Lottery. Be smart, play smart, must be 18 or older to play. Take a quick time out. Jesse Rogers talks baseball with us. Your questions, shoot them to me on Twitter, at the Capman. We're live in San Diego. We are behind the scenes of the baseball winter meetings, brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. Be right back. We'll be right back.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the scenes of the winter meetings with Cap and Company, brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. You're listening to Cap and Company live from San Diego, brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. We are behind the scenes with the baseball winter meetings on ESPN 1000.
Oh, put me in cold. I'm ready to play.
Welcome back, ESPN 1000, behind the scenes. You like that baseball play on words, Jesse Rogers?
Yes.
Behind the scenes of the baseball winter meetings. We are here in San Diego at the Grand Hyatt, where Danny was painting the picture earlier that when we get off the air, I got to go do TV. I was here till 9:30 last night.
Right.
But when we get off, Danny walks through the lobby and is like, oh, my God. There's like more than 1,000 people in the lobby.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, there's a fan who's looking for an autograph, and there's guys looking for, you know, a picture. And then, oh, my God, that's Tony La Russa. That's Dave Dombrowski, that's this guy, that's that guy. Like, you see Hall of Famers walking around.
Totally.
Like Jim Tomey. We're at the coffee shop this morning. Glad to see Jesse can get his delivered. We have to go get our coffee. Anyway, we're down getting coffee this morning, and we're hanging out with Jim Tomey and Joe Girardi.
Yeah, and if you wait around long enough, you will see every single current executive of a team. I mean, they have to go through the lobby at some point, either going from one tower to the other tower, coming back from dinner, coming back from the bar. So you wait out Theo and Jed long enough, Danny, you will see them. But you gotta be positioned in the right place. That's it. As reporters, after 5, 6, 7 winter meetings, I know where the places are to camp out, because it's pretty cool and pretty amazing. And you know, there's people looking for jobs here because this is where the minor league, you know, people come as well. And it's pretty nuts. You know, half the people you're seeing that you don't know probably are agents too of these players. I hung out with a bunch of agents last night. Everybody's jockeying for their jobs. It's like a game of musical chairs at the winter meetings. Who's going to be left without a gig at the end of the week? Now, we know the way baseball's gone, many people will be. But it used to be a lot more would happen. And I guess along those lines, Cap, I might have 24 hours ago, so first morning of the first show, you asked me who's going to make more impactful, Cubs, Sox, and I chose the Cubs. I may have to switch that now after being here for a couple days or day, I guess. It may take longer for the Cubs to get something done. I mean, Theo basically said that, but I'm also hearing out there the ask, and it's not unusual, the ask on, for example, Wilson Contreras, even more than Bryant, is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sort of thing you hear all the time. Early in the offseason, you're making a trade, the ask is huge, and then it comes down. Contreras, the ask is almost more unrealistic than Bryant because he has 3 years left, and he's making no money, and he plays catcher. You know, that's very valuable, and it's valuable to many, many, many teams. Chris Bryant's value is to a specific set of teams that need a third baseman or an outfielder that can afford him, that are contending, that don't mind if he walks in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I think we're learning through Theo and other people is when it comes to if they trade Bryant, the free agents may have to go first. And like I said, so I'm going to game of musical chairs for the teams as well. All right, Donaldson's going here, Rendon's here. Now who wants Chris Bryant? They may have to go that way.
Yeah, John Morosi's saying that the Nationals have engaged the Cubs because people around the Nationals, and I talked to someone yesterday with the Nats who said, yeah, we cannot sign Rendon. We cannot afford $245 million for this guy and then give Rendon a deal approaching $300 million.
So, I mean, think about it. Rendon leaves the Nats. Let's say he goes to the Rangers. So now the Rangers don't need the third baseman. It's the Nats that need it. So that's what I'm talking about, this game of musical chairs. I thought, this is what I initially thought, that Bryant would be really attractive right away because it's only $45 million for a couple years. But as you talk to these GMs and stuff and you know, what their owners are saying, okay, you're going to spend money and prospects. I mean, the GMs are saying that. I have to spend money and prospects. Maybe I would rather have Josh Donaldson. Okay, it's a couple more years, more money, but I don't have to give up these prized top prospects, which we know in the game are much more valuable.
They're like gold.
So as much as yesterday I was like painting the picture, you know, Brian is cost affordable.
Mm-hmm.
He's not when it comes to the prospects you give back.
Well, as we look at the White Sox, yeah. I was down at the Rick Hahn media briefing yesterday.
Yeah, I wasn't there, so you tell me.
He seems to indicate, look, we got a lot of balls in the air,
yeah.
But nothing is close. 3 years ago today, they traded Chris Sale away. I think the next day they finalized the deal to trade Adam Eaton away. And 3 years later, which is fairly quickly for a rebuild, I know it sucks going through it as a fan,
right?
But 3 years later, they've got this impactful team and a willingness to write checks. They just got to find someone to take their money.
Yeah, I think you would agree with me now. We've seen it with the Cubs and Sox. I don't want to call it easy, but the easier part of the rebuild is the sell-off, right? I mean, who isn't going to want Chris Sale? I mean, you have suitors lined up. That's almost the easier part when the Cubs are trading Samardzija and Hamill. Just give me what you got. Just gobble up.
That's the easy part.
That's the easy part. This is the hard part, because if you get it wrong, the rebuild can tank. So adding the right guy at the right time. Now, I know I did read about Sox, you know, Rick Hahn, trades and free agents. I still feel like right now it's free agents. That's the path more than trades for him. I asked him at the GM meetings about moving young players to get veterans back. He basically said we're not ready to do that, like move some of their inventory they've acquired to get a veteran back. I think they want to add veterans through free agency, and then we'll see about the trades maybe later.
In talking with Theo in his suite yesterday, he downplayed how much the $1.2 billion renovation is affecting what he could do financially.
Right.
I don't believe what he said.
I think
he said it creatively.
I think at the very least, you hear the phrase sort of everything matters. Like, it's got to matter. It has to matter in some respect. It just does. If they were making $1.2 billion over these last few years from the other side of the business, don't you think it would affect this side? You know what I mean? Like, it has to have some effect on the conversations behind closed doors. Does it have an exact effect on the budget? I don't know. But at least in a secondary way, it has to have an effect. So maybe there's some muddy ground there. But I still think, you know, the last year or two, something weird has gone on payroll-wise, and it's not just simply, oh, you made a bad signing with Darvish, and that's turning out to be not so bad, turning out to be a bargain, as you mentioned to him, maybe. Something was going on, and this explains it to me, but Theo has denied any overage on the renovations had anything to do with the budget. He has denied that. We should get that out there. But you and I feel like there's something else going on.
Okay, so, you know, fans are tweeting at me, and I get where they're coming from. Spend more money and go get whoever it is to fix the holes that you have. Yet what we're hearing, what they have confirmed, they're going to have to move money to get under the luxury tax. And people are saying, you make insane money. Your franchise is worth $3.5 billion, almost even north of that.
Right.
Why can't you go over the luxury tax again? Theo's take is, it's punitive, and I've got to get this thing back in line so we can make moves.
Yeah, I feel like, and we mentioned this yesterday, we're going to be going in circles chasing our tail if we just keep arguing they should spend more. There's no salary cap in baseball. I agree with some of that. I mean, you just keep going $300 million, $400 million salary at some point. I agree with that. But I would think most GMs that let's take another GM. Most GMs that had what the Cubs have in front of them would be acting prudently, because in 2 years, everyone can walk. Literally, everyone can walk. Now, the other side of that is you can sign up all those guys. It just doesn't make sense. First of all, you haven't won with these guys these last couple of years. So this is where Theo can make his trades and not feel guilty about it, because he is doing four things at once. He is getting under the luxury tax. He is changing up his lineup, which he feels like he needs to do. He's changing up the chemistry, which he feels he needs to do. And he's setting them up for success longer than just the next 2 years. And there's no guarantee they're going to have success, even if they add. Something's gone on that's not worked. Now, there's the theory, oh, well, they're switching managers. I agree with them about their offense. I don't think Joe Maddon was the reason the offense was not performing the way it should. I don't believe that, okay? Maybe there's some things going on that Joe didn't take care of, but I don't think it had to do with the offense. So, yeah, I get spending and adding, but the Red Sox aren't doing it. You know, there's cycles for every team. Theo is really good at articulating these things. Some off seasons are better than others. It's unfortunate, though, that two in a row have to sort of go like this. Like, they did nothing last year, and now they're doing less. They're subtracting this year. Would have been nice in Joe's last year if he was given every tool in January. My biggest criticism about the front office in the last 12 months is signing Kimbrel in June and throwing a party like it was the best thing they've ever done. They should have done that in January, whether it be Kimbrel or someone else, because they knew Brandon Morrow was on shaky ground.
Are they bringing him back?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. Yes.
So that'll get done on a minor league deal.
Minor league deal later in this month, maybe as soon as later in this week.
So if they've got all this money coming off the books, Jesse, from Ben Zobrist, I think it's $12 million, to $20 million on Cole Hamels, to $5 on Kinsler, $6.5 on Strope, $6 on Cishek, and I could keep adding up and get myself my math to $60 million at least. How do they have to keep cutting money?
Yeah, I mentioned this to you yesterday. You have to remember the arbitration raises. I know it won't be as much, but Schwarber's going up. Pretty good, pretty big raise. If Bryant stays, going up. Baez is going up. Rizzo's going up because the
Contreras
option kicked in. Contreras, first-year arb, is definitely going to get a huge raise. He's made nothing. Now, those numbers aren't – nobody's going from $5 million to $20 million, but there's $25, $30 million raises right there, something – I haven't done the numbers. But – regardless, the tax is the number, right? You want to get under that. So if you're going to field a team and give these guys raises, I think they feel like they need to still cut to get under that tax. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, I don't think they're going from 200 to 100, but they're going to get under that number. It's simple. They're going to trade one or two of their stars, and that's the way they're going to shed. And the other guys are going to get their raises. They're not going to replace the stars with other stars. They're going to hopefully replace them with prospect or major league ready players. And, you know, if it all comes together in 2020, God bless them, but more than likely it's 2021. And here's the thing. Next offseason, Rick, it's better to, you know, come on. You can't go three off seasons and not expect to add some big.
Well, you have a lot more money coming off the books after the 2020 season. John Lester's money falls off the books. That's
right.
$25 million.
Huge. And there's at least one or two.
Tyler Chatwood.
Chatwood, right.
So you're at $40 million
right
between just two guys.
Right. And now you are getting close. But someone's going to get extended. Like Baez gets extended. Now you've added money. So, it goes back and forth like that. You know, Marquis will be up and running, and they're not paying you, so they can take that money get a $5 to $10 million player.
Did you hear Joe take a little swipe at me?
I saw it on Twitter. Obviously, I couldn't watch it because I'm here, but well-deserved, whatever it was.
Take your shots.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. He says he likes the barroom discussion.
Yeah.
But he rarely says that you're right and I'm wrong about the stuff.
He
right?
Never he will ever does. Admit that he was wrong.
I said rarely because he did admit the Game 6 stuff, you know, when he left Chapman in. But that's one of the few times.
Yeah, because he had the entire world
right,
watching
right. That
one. Nothing he could do.
He couldn't push
he
back.
He couldn't run
one.
From that one.
But
so.
He looks good. He looks happy. Change sometimes can be good. We talked about this. You know, a new challenge, new... Your message won't be stale on day one in L.A. You know, just sometimes 5-6 years is
I love
enough.
How he was dressed yesterday. He had the boots on.
Yeah.
He had the black jean jacket. Like, he's in a good place, man. He just signed for another $10 million.
He has a place, I think Laguna Beach, that he's been renting out. Now he'll just move in there. So you got to be happy for him. And is there any doubt he's not going to elevate that team in some manner? Elevate. I don't know where it ends.
Right.
But... look, I think the Astros are vulnerable. Now, we had discussions last night.
That organization's in a bad
way
right now.
Right. You don't think there's going to be some carryover? I think there will be.
Big time.
Now the A's are good, but come on, the Angels can compete with the A's, certainly monetarily.
Especially if they get Gerrit Cole.
If they get Gerrit Cole, that's huge. What was I say? So a lot of people really think the Astros are going to – The punishment for their sign-stealing is going to be huge. I mean
– it should be.
Some people are talking maybe – it's just talk. Lifetime ban for Lunau, Hinch, 2-year suspension. I mean, I don't know if we're talking that level, but you do have to make it harsh. If you make it harsh enough, it doesn't happen again.
All right.
You got to make it harsh.
All right, we got to take a timeout. Jeff Passan's expected to be here with us. We'll talk baseball with you and with JP. Hey, take the guesswork out of gifting gadgets with help from Apt Electronics, ABT. Your holiday headquarters. Find everything from this year's must-have accessories like Apple AirPods with wireless charging case to the building blocks of a killer home theater system. Speakers, subwoofers, soundbars, some Klipsch. Not sure what to get? Apps experts are happy to guide you. Call us 847-544-2222, 847-544-2222, or visit us at app.com for free shipping and free same-day delivery on thousands of items. App-pleasing people since 1936. Ask for the great Steve Shapiro when you visit Apt, A-B-T. We class to join up. Jeff Passan joins us next.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the scenes of the winter meetings with Cap and Company. Brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer.
Carmen and Yurko.
It's Packer Week. We're talking Bears and Packers with Kyle Brandt at 12:30.
Big plus for the defense. Hicks going to be back, and hopefully Amukamara too.
Plus Jesse Rogers from San Diego. See you at noon for Crosstalk on ESPN 1000.
Thanks, Carmen Yurk. We'll talk to them coming up at noon. Don't forget, Rick Hahn will be here at 11:25. Top of the hour, Jim Bowden, the former two-time MLB GM, now with MLB Network, will be with us. But we welcome Jeff Passan. He is the guru of ESPN's baseball coverage, and Jesse Rogers. I'm David Kaplan. Jesse's always brought to you by Dan Fields and the Fields Auto Group. Get a unique, one-of-a-kind car buying experience by visiting one of their many Chicagoland dealerships or visit them at fieldsauto.com. All right, JP.
Hold on a sec. You got a car sponsorship?
Look, I got to get to work every day. I got to get to Wrigley every day.
How about that? I write a car payment every month. That guy gets a free car.
Hey, don't expose me. I want to keep that gig.
Don't hate the player. I understand.
Exactly.
Okay, so the White Sox have a checkbook. They don't know if anyone's going to take their money, while the Cubs are, like, pulling back. Does that surprise you, role reversal? Because the last time in San Diego, the Cubs were the darlings getting John Lester.
How good, by the way, does that contract look in hindsight?
How good does the Darvish contract now look?
I'm not going to go there yet.
One half season doesn't do it for passengers yet.
Theo said that yesterday because I said, how good does it look? He goes, say that again.
Yeah. And not just that. Let's remember, the Cubs have been the darlings of multiple winter meetings. Mm-hmm. When they signed Ben Zobrist for $56 million, I believe that was the biggest deal that was signed at that winter meetings, too. And before Steven Strasburg yesterday got $245 million, I believe the biggest contract signed between John Lester's and Strasburg's was Ben Zobrist at a winter meeting.
Right. Hayward came Hayward came the day after the winter meetings, because that would have been the biggest one.
That is how bad the winter meetings have sucked for a half decade now.
Wow.
No offense, Ben Zobrist.
It does remind you in those years how active the Cubs were.
It does.
You asked how surprising. Sorry, but it's not that surprising. These are the cycles for teams, and
Jesse, hold on a second. Do these have to be the cycles for teams?
No.
Here's the thing. Yeah. If the core of the Cubs had done what all of us expected it to do, we would not be having this conversation right now. We would not be saying that they're in the down wave of the cycle. They're in the down wave of a cycle right now because they underachieved. And that's the fundamental frustration, I think, of this organization and what has happened since 2016. And we talk about this all the time, man. They just did not capitalize on their window.
Yes.
They put their fingers in the jam and got it shut on them.
Yeah,
I agree with all that.
But no matter, let's say they'd won a couple of World Series and it looked a little bit better these last couple of years, they'd still be in a spot that nothing will have changed contractually. Four or five players, and if Russell had performed well, another player, up for free agency in 2 years, and tough decisions would have to be made. That's kind of what I mean, like the cycle of the the years, the first three, then the second 3 years, and now we have decisions to make. And it's just, I think it's unusual to have four or five at the same exact time. That doesn't happen that often, but here we are.
Yeah, that's and I can't ever call that bad planning, for example, but I think if you were to ask in an ideal world what they would have, it would be a staggered thing where a guy could, two guys come up 1 year, two guys come up the next year, just so they can spread out and mitigate the risk. Right. And, all of the risk has been put in the same place with this team, and it's coming back to bite him.
How much value does Chris Bryant have in the trade market? Because Buster said yesterday he doesn't have the value you all think he has. I talked to Steve Phillips, and he said, please. That guy's an MVP candidate. He's a top 25 player. He absolutely does.
Chris Bryant's value right now is hampered by the available third baseman on the free agent market.
Which is what I said to you last segment.
Rendon and Donaldson.
Yeah, what I said to you last segment.
Rendon is better than Chris Bryant.
No doubt.
And all he costs is money. And if there's one thing
a lot of it.
29 teams in baseball have, not the Cubs, but 29 teams in baseball have, I say that tongue in cheek.
Right.
They got a lot of money. Josh Donaldson's available. And Josh Donaldson, look, Chris Bryant the next 2 years is going to cost probably about $50 million.
Not even.
Yeah. Between 45 and 50, mm-hmm. somewhere in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Josh Donaldson for the next 3 years is going to cost $75 million. And again, he's not going to cost
prospects.
Really good. And I say really good because I think the Cubs do not trade Chris Bryant unless they get a really good return.
Right.
And there is, look, every person I talk with down in the lobby believes that Chris Bryant is the one who's going to move. Now, these are not people who are, well, there are some who are in the organization, not all of them, but there is a consensus that Bryant is going to be the guy. Is that going to be the case? It all depends on the offers. It all depends on how much, you know. I heard something yesterday. I'm sure you heard the same. San Diego wants Wilson Contreras.
Right.
Talk to San Diego. The ask is absurd. I mean, the ask should be absurd right now.
Yeah, he's a two-time All-Star catcher.
So let's play this out with Bryant. Let's just say Rendon goes to the Rangers. Let's say Donaldson. You want to say the
Let's say the Phillies.
Let's say. So now you have the Braves. We both agree.
That, by the way, is the best-case scenario for the Cubs right there.
Right.
Donaldson to the Phillies,
right.
Rendon to the Rangers.
Right. I agree with you because the Dodgers and Braves, we both agree the Dodgers are sort of laying in the weeds. The Dodgers and Braves have the right type of prospects and Major League ready
Nationals.
Players to return.
Nats aren't going to happen.
They would not be in play on Bryant.
I don't think so.
Okay. White Sox have a checkbook. Jerry has said, okay, I'm getting, not getting any younger here. I want to win. Will anyone take their money?
Madison Bumgarner could take their money. I'm trying to think of guys. Marcelo Zuna could take their money.
What about Dallas Keuchel?
Dallas Keuchel definitely could take their money. Is Dallas Keuchel the guy, though, you want at the top of the rotation?
Probably not.
No. No, you
don't. He's like a three.
I mean, it's
Dallas Keuchel's going to want – he's not going to want tippity top of the rotation money. He's going to want to get paid, though.
You know, comparisons to the Cubs are great, and the idea that they need their version of John Lester, right? That's what's going on here. The Sox need somebody to take a little bit of a leap. And, you know, I was reminded – I don't know who I was talking to, maybe even Jeff – that when John Lester made that leap, in 15, it wasn't a fait accompli that they were going to absolutely for sure get him or that guy. Now, they had a history with him. So they had a little bit of an advantage. My point being, so I wanted to ask you, Jeff, you know guys like Madison and some of these guys better than we do. Who's the guy that would want to take that leap and sort of lead the White Sox out of their abyss? You know what I mean?
I don't know if that guy's left. I don't know if that guy's on this market right now.
Probably right.
It's not Baumgartner?
No.
And they're not going to be in the Gerrit Cole sweepstakes. All right, as we let you go, Gerrit Cole, over, under, $320 million.
Ooh, 320. I thought you were going to go 300. I'll take the under on 320. I will take the over on 300, though.
Over 300.
We are taking the over now.
Yeah.
Because of 245.
Yeah, I'm actually over 320.
That's not an unreasonable place to be.
He's a pitcher, man.
He is a pitcher. Listen.
And a damn good one.
You are preaching to the choir right here. But
the man that wrote the book on what an arm
that is a great book,
can't
by
do.
The way.
Thank you. And I appreciate the plug there.
Yeah.
The arm by your finest local bookstores.
Right. Holidays.
How good... I talked about this earlier. How amazing does the Lester contract look now? I wrote a whole chapter on the Cubs' pursuit of John Lester.
It's phenomenal.
And for him to have held up with all the diligence they did, I mean, it's just one of the great contracts in franchise
We all agree
history.
In Chicago. I mean, we often talk about the other sports in Chicago. It's one of the best free agent signings of any sport.
Hey, guys, thank you for the time.
Thank you,
guys.
Cap.
Are awesome.
You got it, Cap.
We got Jim Bowden coming up, then Rick Hahn coming up, then Carmen and Yurko for Crosstalk. Jeff Passan, Jesse Rogers, thank you. Hey, if you're looking for a great meal today, barbecue has got to be at the top of your list, and that means Southern Cut Barbecue. David Flom and Matt Moore, two of the greatest restaurateurs our city's ever seen. They own Chicago Cut. This is their sister restaurant, Southern Cut. Try the championship barbecue dry rub ribs with four different sauces on the side, smoked chicken, pulled pork, diced brisket, skirt steak, amazing sides, microbrews, bourbons, and the banana Fofana cream pie that Eddie Olchek gobbles down 5-6 slices a week. It's awesome. 198 East Delaware Place, block east of the Mag Mile in downtown Chicago. Have a wonderful time eating there. We'll take a quick time out. Jim Bowden will join us next.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the scenes of the winter meetings with Cap and Company. Brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer.